One thing we found is the weeks we launched podcasts or we launched episodes of our podcasts, our applications that week would go up by about 60%. When you looked at applications over time, we saw all these spikes for every week that we launched our podcast. That's because we launched a podcast, we sent out an email newsletter talking about the podcast, and we tweet a lot that week talking about whatever topic was in the podcast.
With our digital strategy, we knew that we had to do it all because students live online, and specifically in season two and the pandemic, we knew that we needed a newsletter. We needed what we would do, listening parties on Twitter. So we'd say, we're about to have a listening party, like hang out with John, Mimi, and Lauren. And then we would go through the whole episode and do tweets. And that showed so much engagement.
Welcome to Throughout the Playbook, the podcast for recruiters tired of hearing that hiring is broken and ready to do something about it. I'm your host, Rona Pierce. In this episode, I sit down with John Julik and Lauren Zabel, former members of Twitter's university recruiting team, to talk about how they leverage podcasting to boost applications by 60% and hire 4 people directly from their podcast audience. You'll hear how they came up with the idea for their hit podcast, Building Characters, how they got buy-in and support from leadership, and their advice for other TA teams looking to start a recruiting podcast. But first, let's hear about John and Lauren's unique journeys to talent acquisition.
I used to be a circus acrobat, which is my weird backstory. And then after circus, I got old and I couldn't do circus anymore. So I moved to San Francisco, hoping to get a job from Montreal, moved to San Francisco, hoping to get a job in tech. And I got a job at Twitter in the sales org. And then I was doing that for a couple of years, organizing diversity recruiting events for our BRGs, or our business resource groups or employee resource groups. I was helping organize recruiting events for this. And then our university manager was like, hey, John, do you want to do what you're doing for fun, organizing events, but do it for your job? And I was like, yeah, that sounds awesome. So I moved over to university recruiting, organizing university events and diversity events.
So my journey to TA was that I was living in San Francisco right when I graduated from college, and I was actually working at a nonprofit. And I really felt like I was missing out on history. I saw the rise of tech companies happening, making our world, you know, more interconnected. And I was like, what am I doing? So I pivoted and started at a company called Brightroll. And I was embedded in their engineering organization. And I supported engineering managers and this CTO. But my favorite part of my whole job was 20% of my job, and that was managing our 5 software engineering interns. And that has really just kind of been my career story, is always finding the next job that takes that 20% and makes it larger. So after that, I like pivoted my whole career, went into university programs at Uber, various companies since, obviously worked with John for 5 of those years at Twitter on their early talent team.
It's always so interesting how everyone lands in TA, because hardly ever anyone says, I went to school for recruiting and ended up here.
No.
Amazing. So you guys took a very creative approach to talent acquisition and attracting university students to Twitter. What inspired you to integrate podcasting into your TA strategy?
When Lauren and I first went to the university team, we were only hiring from like 5 or 6 Ivy League schools. It wasn't a very broad talent pool that we're going after. So some of the things we did when we went to the university team was went to more campuses. We started going to 30 campuses instead of 6-ish. Bit more diversity schools, HBCUs and HSIs. And then we wanted to get some of the smaller schools that we couldn't go to everywhere. So we had a pretty broad digital strategy, where we had an email newsletter, we were very active with our Twitter handle, which no longer exists. And then the podcast added on to that digital strategy to try to give people a more in-depth look of what it's like working at Twitter, how to get a job at Twitter, how to get a good internship, but doing it at scale, trying to reach a lot of different people.
And I'll toot John's horn because he won't do it. John was on our campus events team. It was called the Hype Team because at Twitter, everything had a little bit of a different name. And they were so innovative, that team, in how they kept thinking about campus strategy, not doing the same old in terms of, you know, you must attend this, you know, campus event or things like that. Every year they presented a strategy to our team of how to shake it up and how to do it differently. And so the Hype Team, and specifically one of his colleagues, Julie, was like, I'm addicted to podcasts. It's all I listen to. I listen to Crime Junkie. I listen to How Things Get Made. And she was like, why don't we do this? I mean, and you have to put the context and the time around this. This was 2019. So this is pre-pandemic. This is when podcasts were like, oh, some cool people do it, but it was not as mainstream as it is today. And so it was, to me, it was groundbreaking. I thought it was the most interesting thing happening in early talent was having this podcast.
Yeah, and I noticed that it was pre-pandemic. So it was pre, like, all of this creative ways of attracting people because everyone was at home. How did that go down, John, when you presented it to the team and to management? Like, this is what we want to do. Did you get any pushback? Were people receptive?
Well, our first season was way pre-pandemic. And our second season, like, we started filming and then the pandemic happened. So, like, we're like, oh, well, how are you going to do this? Guess we'll record in people's homes. But it was our second season. We already did one season that went really well and we had a lot of listens. So the second season was a pretty good buy-in. It didn't actually cost too much and we were really organized to try to limit the amount of time it took. I think we filmed everything in like a month and a half. Yeah. Is that right, Lauren? We had a really tight schedule where we filmed everything really fast. Before our, because with university recruiting, we start going on campus in like September, maybe late August. So we tried to film everything within like the month and a half before those dates we start going on campus. So it was a really tight schedule. We recorded everything really quickly, and then we released the episodes over time.
And I will say the environment of Twitter allowed for this innovation and creativity. We had a really supportive CMO, Leslie Berlin, that was supportive of the podcast. Our talent acquisition team obviously had to green light season 2, which is the season that John and I co-hosted. So they had to, you know, see the data, see the proof, like, was this worth it? And not only that, they had to believe in us. There was a sense of, like, John and I, for season 2, in terms of our management leadership, the things that we wanted to accomplish. And that was, John, I'm sure we'll talk about his love of data. John is a very data-driven person. And he was like, so that was season 1, but season 2 is a part of this digital strategy. We want to, John is very, very focused on seeing numbers trend up. And so one of those numbers was applications because he likes quantifiable numbers. And so seeing your applications go up for your roles every time you drop a podcast is obviously a correlation that it's working.
Yeah, I love data too. So love to be in company of people who are very data driven. So would you say that applications was really the main goal that you had when you started at least season 2?
Applications and engagement with the tweets. So we had some branding goals, which like engagements, downloads, was like a branding goal. How long people were listening. And then those quantifiable goals like applications and making sure that applications were correlating to the podcast, or at least the podcast making them go up.
John, being a campus recruiter, my background, I'm actually a early talent recruiter. I put candidates in the funnel. So my goal was I am going to hire people that listen. And I was, you know, I set the goal at 1. And we actually made 4 diverse hires from season 2 that I'm incredibly proud of. And those were students that listened, DM'd me, tweeted back to us about certain episodes, how they, you know, really touched them. I got a, you know, an unbelievable DM from a working mom that was like, I'm in college. You know, my husband's in the military. I listened to this podcast and I feel like I could be in tech. I've never had that feeling before because I have so many challenges. And I really listened to this and I know I have what it takes. And I was so blown away by that, that it was finally a way to engage a population. Like, you know, she's a student, she's in school. She has all these other intersections in her life. But at the end of the day, like, that was a population in a candidate pool we had never accessed before, and it's really hard to engage. And having this podcast where, you know, she could listen to it in her own time and in her own way was once again one of these like surprises of the podcast, engaging a diverse pool of candidates that we didn't even dream of.
Can you walk us through a little of how you went about choosing topics for your podcast?
So, fun fact about me is that I live in Los Angeles. My whole family is in entertainment and media. I have a degree, actually, film and media studies. And so when we went into season two, I kind of took it to be the same as putting together a television or movie. And so we actually went in as a virtual writing room, me, John, and Mimi. And we set the kind of mission statement that every idea is a good idea. Every idea would be heard. Like, give it your all. And we sat there for hours and we pitched every idea that we had. We then narrowed that down to what we thought achieved our goals. So not only was it a good idea, it was branding, catchy, you know, interesting, but did it hit those goals that we set out? And so that's how we created kind of the arc of the show.
That's so important to be able to like not just launch a good idea, but it correlates directly back to your goals. So what types of podcast episodes did you see that were the most effective in attracting candidates?
Well, one of our most listened to podcasts was about our APM program, our Associate Product Manager program, which is a 2-year post-grad program where they moved around to different products inside Twitter. We had an event that would talk about this that would sell out because everyone would come to this event because it's a very popular program. So we decided to get something similar to help people learn about the program. But make it digital so more people could attend and more people had access to more information about this. And I thought it was really cool. We got one of our APMs was the host. They interviewed other APMs about the program and talked about their experience. So we didn't have to interview. It was great. We outsourced part of that. But it was the most listened to podcast also.
So let's talk a little about measuring success and just like going into the data side of things. Mm-hmm. Can you share any specific examples of how the podcast directly impacted your talent acquisition efforts?
So with our digital strategy, we had an email newsletter and their Twitter account and the podcast. So our email newsletter would go out we had physical events on campus too, and events at their office, one of our offices. So our newsletter had 120,000 recipients, which was our previous, anyone who is currently in school and they applied for one of our jobs previously, or they registered for an event, or they just registered on our website. So this large group that was getting emails from us, and we used that to promote our live events, but also promote their podcast when it came out, or our camps. We had some diversity camps and we had other applications when the applications went live. So we used that email newsletter to get out, as well as our Twitter account. We used our Twitter account a lot when our podcast went live. We would live tweet what was happening on the podcast, or during the week we tweet what was on the podcast theme. We had all these like tweets signed up, and we had about 3 million views for our tweets on there, which is pretty a lot.
Yeah.
A lot, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And I should say, with our digital strategy, we knew that we had to do it all because students live online. And specifically in season two and the pandemic, we knew that we needed a newsletter. We needed what we would do, listening parties on Twitter. So we'd say, we're about to have a listening party, like hang out with John, Mimi, and Lauren. And then we would go through the whole episode and do tweets. And that showed so much engagement of students being like, my resume needs to be a PDF. Like, Word is the devil. Like, I had no idea. So those would be like tweets and responses that we would get, which would be awesome. But I should say, like, they're a highly, highly online population. So our email newsletter of this 120,000 in email marketing, like your open rate, like a good open rate is above 1%. Like it's that low that people don't open emails. Ours hovered honestly at 50%. So people, they loved getting emails from Twitter U. They loved learning about the podcast. So we knew we had to kind of deliver a hyper engagement on the digital side.
And we talked a little about like applications, and we've talked about some of the successes that you had. What about any of the other typical TA metrics that people measure? Did you see any like quantifiable impacts from the podcast on these metrics?
One thing we found is the weeks we launched podcasts or we launched episodes of our podcast, our applications that week would go up by about 60%. When you looked at applications over time, we saw all these spikes for every week that we launched our podcast. That's because we launched a podcast, we sent out an email newsletter talking about the podcast, and we tweet a lot that week talking about this whatever topic was in the podcast. So that really helped our applications go up, and it correlated really highly for when we launched the podcast episodes.
How did you guys go about tracking and like analyzing the success of the podcast? Like what tools did you guys use? How did you go about it?
We use a lot of Google Sheets. I love some Google Sheets. But tweet activity, we could download that from the tweet analytics dashboard, which probably doesn't exist anymore, but we could download engagements and views for all of our tweets that we had. And for our email newsletter, we could track that within our email software. We could see how many opens we had, our open rate, and how many people clicked on the links there. We could use Google Analytics to see what traffic came from the email newsletters, and then listens on the podcast also, and engagement when people are communicating with us about the podcast.
One cool thing that I saw, I got a sneak peek or like a little preview of how you would present things to management, which I thought was amazing. So when you were presenting your analytics and your ROI to management, how did you like structure your presentation to highlight impact and value effectively?
Yeah, and this is the brainchild of our behind the scenes third co-host, which is Mimi. Mimi and in really conjunction with John put together a one pager of our season. We all knew at the end of it that we didn't want to forget all the things we accomplished. We really felt like building characters was the highlight of all of our careers. And it was super important for us to remember this milestone. So we put together this incredible one pager. And I'll pass it over to John to walk through what it looked like.
Yeah. So we had some of the metrics on here, like some of our tangible metrics, like downloads of the podcast, what podcast episodes were the most popular. We had 10,000 downloads, which I think was amazing. So quite a bit of audience there. Then some of our other digital audiences, like email, newsletter. We had 3 million impressions with our tweets about the podcast and 40,000 engagements with our tweets. So pretty large social media metrics there. We had the four hires. Lauren hired four people directly from the podcast, which was amazing. And then we had a 4.9 star review on Apple Podcasts. And we highlighted some of the reviews that people put on there on how helpful the podcast was for them. So those are some of our metrics that we included in this one pager. One thing that was pretty cool when we were launching the podcast, like the word got around a little bit and other people started getting excited about it. So our CHRO, our head of HR and recruiting, she was on the podcast with us talking about our remote strategy, because we were doing remote before the pandemic. So we talked about our remote strategy and why we were being remote and why we were doing this before everyone else was. We had snippets from Ned Siegel, our CFO. There's a snippet of Jack on there. Our VP of engineering did an interview with us about diversity in tech. So it was pretty, some heavy hitters were interested in it. We also got nominated for a Webby Award, which is pretty cool. Nominated for a Webby, which our CMO had to sign off on. So we're talking to our CMO about this. So it's pretty cool. We had all these like C-level executives that gave us buy-in for this podcast who were featured on it and who are excited that we were doing it. So it was pretty fun.
Yeah.
And it's always so cool to get buy-in from everyone, especially people from different departments. That always helps everything go well. But I think a lot of it has to do with how well you guys were presenting and how well you were tracking things and making sure that it wasn't just a cool podcast, but it was a podcast that they could see the return on the investment on the time on this.
Absolutely.
Did you guys face any challenges with using a podcast as a recruitment tool?
Yes, microphones. John will tell you all about it. What a challenge.
Oh, microphones. So we're all at home now. Pandemic hit. Everyone's at home. How do I get everyone a microphone? And we were on a shoestring budget. That was part of the deal, was we could do the podcast, but we had very little budget to do it. So I couldn't just keep buying microphones. So I was based in San Francisco, both Laura and I were based in San Francisco at the time. So I get a microphone and we ship it. And when we ship it to someone, the label for the next person would be in the box. And then they would ship it to the next person and the label for go back to San Francisco, be in the box and come home. So we had like a Google spreadsheet of every microphone and like where it was going and what days it had to go there and when it was coming back. And when you print labels with USPS or FedEx, you have to like say the estimated date that they're going to get shipped. So we're like, okay, they need this on like Friday. So I'm going to ship it on Wednesday. I'll get there on Thursday. They'll record on Friday and they put it back on Monday in the mailbox. And then I'll like ship on Tuesday. And by Wednesday, it's going to get to the other place in New York. So it was like all these logistics of one thing get to another.
If there was any delay in like the microphone arriving, that was a nightmare. I had a TaskRabbit in deep, deep Brooklyn, New York, like deep. Like there, like he had to drive like 15 miles to go to a Best Buy to buy a microphone because one didn't show up for our class of 2020 episode. So yeah, microphones were genuinely a challenge.
And they're so important for a podcast because the audio is like really the most important thing. So I understand why it was so important for you guys to get microphones to everyone. So what were some surprising benefits that you got from this podcasting initiative?
Well, I think on the just on the talent acquisition side, for John and I to have senior level leadership conversations about early talent hiring. You know, early talent hiring, unfortunately, is always looked over, even though it's such volume to the company. So it was really nice to just get their attention for a moment about the impact we were having on Twitter by hiring students into all these different, you know, departments.
And when we had the nomination for the Webby Award, there's like some press behind that. We didn't win, unfortunately. They would have been more press. But since that was happening, we had the loop in marketing, and then that went all the way up to our CMO to approve us like doing this nomination, which was pretty fun. One thing that happened that was kind of cool was we talked about a few sensitive subjects. Once we talked about verification and we talked about election security. So we had these two sensitive topics we talked about, and those had to go through comms, all the way up through comms, through security, and because we didn't know if we could talk about this or not. And then we had a verification episode talking about our verification like strategy, and that got cut. So we were like, no, we don't want to talk about this. So one of our episodes, one of our sections did get cut out.
That episode was called Ask Me Anything. So we wanted to really live up to the AMA title of things that people are always so curious about Twitter.
Yeah, because verification was definitely one of the biggest things that everyone wanted to figure out on Twitter, for sure.
We talked to the product manager in charge of it to explain it to us so we would know. And then they're like, we can't tell this to everybody. Like, we need to keep this on the DL because they're going to start complaining. Yeah. We're like, okay.
I think it was really part of the magic of verification on Twitter. It's very different now, but like that whole, no one really knew what was the criteria and people just applied and it's like, I didn't get in. How did this person get in? All of that. I think that was really a big part of Twitter culture. So what advice would you give for other TA professionals that are considering launching a podcast?
We did it in a time where podcasts were niche interests, like they were definitely gaining popularity, had followings, but more like cult followings. Now I think podcasts are generally a sense of news and how news breaks. So obviously these fields have changed. So John and I asked each other, like, what would we, you know, do now that podcasts, for example, are videos. You know, that's a huge change. So we think there's no question your podcast has to include the video recording of it. That's a huge change. And we were talking about how much we would have actually really loved that if we did that way back in 2020, because we had such amazing guests and we would have also just loved to showcase our students. Not that their voices don't matter, but that their video obviously would have just really highlighted them as well.
Yeah, video definitely. I'm a big fan of video. It's a best way to really get people to trust you. And that's really what you're doing when you're hiring. You're getting people who wouldn't usually apply to your company to get to know you, to trust you. And I mean, you guys did a great job with the podcast, but video for sure would like level that up.
I think also when we're telling recommendations on people who are interested in starting a podcast for recruiting, understand what your goals are of your company. What are the company goals? What's your tangible ROI going to be of this podcast? Is it branding? Are you doing branding and hiring? Do you want applications? Like, what are you trying to solve for? And make sure you're targeting that when you're making your podcast and it's measurable and you can measure it. Also, I thought our topics went really well with things that differentiated us at Twitter, like our work from home. We had a big, big work from home culture. So we had an episode about working from home and highlighting that. We had a lot of new grads. So we talked about our class of 2020 where we highlighted all our new grads. So we tried to focus on our differentiators and what we were good at when we're doing our podcast. Also, I'm a big fan of like, what value are we adding to the people listening to this? So we tried to have like a list at the end of like resume tips. Here's a list of 10 resume tips you have to make sure you're doing. Here's like how to stand out when you're at a recruiting event. Like having lists and try to make sure people retain what we wanted them to retain to make them better and add value to their lives.
To add to John, I think now in 2024, long form conversations on video for podcasts are kind of the norm. But we wanted ours to be educational and instructional. It was not a long form conversation podcast. So we had different sections, different formats that were really like, you could take notes. We had a whole section for how to show up and stand out at a conference. And there was a whole section by a recruiter. Here are the things you should do. So we wanted kind of, I guess, that element of education and instruction to our podcast.
And I think that's still something that would be very relevant in 2024, because at the end of the day, candidates, that they want this information. There's so much information out there of what to do and how to get a job. But if you're listening or watching a podcast from a company that you want to work at, and they're telling you specifically their tips and breaking it down in a way where you can take notes, I mean, that's gold.
I would send the building characters link to every candidate I've been in the process. I've said, listen to our podcast. And I would, you know, every week I was sending emails. If there was a new episode coming out, I would change that in my email being like, next week is You Belong in Tech. Like, listen to this episode about blank, blank, blank.
Would you guys do this again? Like, you're now at different companies. Would you start a podcast again?
I would do it with Lauren.
John and I talked about this a lot.
We had so much fun.
We had so much fun. We loved doing this. It played to our strengths and things that we love about being in talent acquisition. So it really just like filled our heart. It filled our cup. Absolutely. Do we know what podcast we would bring to this world? Who knows? But yeah, anything with John.
Lauren and John's enthusiasm and passion for their work is truly contagious. It's clear that building characters was more than just a recruiting initiative. It was a labor of love that showcased their creativity, strategic thinking, and dedication to creating an exceptional candidate experience. If you'd like to learn more about Twitter's Building Characters podcast, connect with Lauren and John on LinkedIn. I've included the links to their profiles, as well as the link to the Building Characters podcast in the show notes. Next week, I'm chatting with Amy Miller, a senior recruiter at Amazon and LinkedIn top voice, about building successful partnerships with hiring managers. If you know anything about Amy, you know that she doesn't follow outdated playbooks. You don't want to miss that episode. And if you want to learn more about podcasting to attract talent, check out episode 1,
where I sat down with Tanum Sullivan, the employer branding and people experience manager at Golden Hippo. She focuses on featuring employee stories on her podcast and has seen a significant improvement in the quality of applications and employee engagement. If you're enjoying Throughout the Playbook, leave us a 5-star review. Reviews help listeners find us. And by all means, click share and send Throughout the Playbook to anyone you think might be into it. Thanks for listening, and I'll chat with you next week.